Vegas, baby, Vegas!
At the end of the game, you've caught up your money. That's how you find out who's best.
All my bets were safe. There just wouldn't be any juice.
The point spreads, the prop bets, the teasers, the parlays. From Vegas to you, this is Behind the Bets.
Welcome into the latest Behind the Bets podcast, the first one of December. That means conference title games. That means Selection Day coming up on Sunday. Travis, how do you feel about Ohio State smacking Michigan yet again, or that school up north?
I enjoy it. I was a little nervous early on, but
Once they play four quarters.
Yeah, you know, that's kind of been Ohio State's thing, is at some point it's going to break their way and the dam's going to break, and that's what happened.
How'd you feel when Justin Fields left the game?
Nervous.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, we go as he goes, and if he can't play, we can't win a national championship.
I thought he was done. I mean, you know, we've all seen injuries in the past, so I'm sure I'm not the only guy who thought that, but it was great to see him come back and then obviously had the touchdown pass right away. So no surprise there. I mean, I didn't grab the points with Michigan. I kind of leaned there, but I was just scared. You can't bet into this Buckeyes team that's covered just seemingly all year. We're going to dive deeper into all this with John Murray, Mr. Executive Director. We're also going to talk to Paul Stone, who's been on the program a lot, was not on last week, and he'll be back. He's got some plays on some lower profile games in addition to the total in the SEC title game. But Travis, I want to apologize to you for the late taping. I was about 10 minutes late to the pod. I got stuck coming out of my driveway, and that's after my driveway was cleared of snow, because I went at a little bit of an angle, and then my I have a two-door sports car, and it just got caught up, and I had a little difficulty to shovel around my tire and needed a little push to get down the driveway. Where do you stand on the taking care of the snow at your home? Do you go with the service, or do you go with yourself, snowblower and everything?
Well, I have an apartment, so I don't have to worry about that stuff, but I would probably just do it myself.
Was this part of your chores growing up?
Yeah.
Okay.
I always just had go get the driveway cleaned off. That was just how it is.
Yeah. No, I applaud the youngin taking care of it. My thing is, I hurt my back doing this 4 years ago, I want to say. And I've had to do it because of our weird work hours sometimes. But I do have a service, and I think it's like a must. I just think the manual labor it takes and the effort and the potential back pain – I mean, I think if you're going to have a house, now I rent, but if you're going to own a house, I think you got to factor it in. It's not that expensive.
It's like a workout, though.
It is a good workout, but when you're in your 40s, Travis, sometimes it's
not allowed to go to the gym when you're in the 40s.
Sometimes it's better to hop on the Peloton and not hurt yourself.
All right, if you say so, I'm not there yet. So,
all right, let's get to it.
Money won is twice as sweet as money earned.
True words by the inimitable Bob Lee, the legend, as we bring in another legend, Paul Stone, back to the podcast. Paul, after Thanksgiving break, hope you had a nice holiday, and welcome back, my friend.
I did. Hope you guys did as well, and great to be back, ready for championship week this weekend.
All right, well, lighter card, as you very well know. I am not, like, loaded with picks this week, so I'm our listeners and myself are leaning on you, the great wisdom of you, and to kind of lead us to the direction of some winners. And I have a money line parlay I'm going to run by you in a moment. But first, I want to talk about, we'll get to like all your top plays, but let's start with your top plays per se. So let's just go through in terms of the biggest game that you think is worth a play in your eyes.
Well, I'm going to look at the Sun Belt Conference Championship game between Louisiana and Appalachian State there in Boone, North Carolina, starting at 12 noon Eastern on Saturday. You look at these two schools, and they played earlier in the year. If you remember, Louisiana was a short favorite there in Lafayette over Appalachian State. Appalachian State won that game 17-7. You look at these two teams, they played in the last two seasons. They've played three times. In those three meetings over the last 2 years, Louisiana has averaged just 14.3 points per game against Appalachian State. They've scored fewer than 20 points in all three of those meetings. They've had just 16 first downs in all three of those meetings and averaged just 4.6 yards per play against the Mountaineers in those three games. So to frame what 4.6 yards per play looks like statistically among the FBS 130 teams, that would put you in the bottom 15. So suffice it to say, Louisiana has had trouble moving the ball against Appalachian State. You look at Appalachian State, they're still, although their hopes are a little bit remote perhaps for the Group of Five's spot in a New Year's Six bowl game, they still have some hope for that particular bid. They do trail Memphis, Boise, and Cincinnati slightly in that race, but they at least have a prayer. They play an early game on Saturday. They play before those other three contenders will be playing. So when it's playing Louisiana, I think Appalachian State will still have some measure of hope for that spot. And Mountaineers rather be inclined to record some style points for good measure. Louisiana, in the spirit of full disclosure, they are getting some key defensive players back for this title game, but they're likely going to be missing some key pieces on offense. Their number two receiver, Jamal Bell, who has 31 catches for 416 yards, he's listed as doubtful. In fourth year, starting right tackle Robert Hunt, a preseason first-team Sun Belt pick, expected to miss his sixth straight game. So two key pieces of their offense going to be out. In review again, Appalachian State's defeated Louisiana three times by double digits over the course of the past two seasons. Mountaineers, the clear-cut class of the conference, and with the exception of a midseason hiccup against Georgia Southern, they won all their conference games by double digits. I think they beat Louisiana by double digits here. The line that you're seeing pretty much right now, consensus 6.5, lay the 6.5, take Appalachian State.
Okay, there are some sixes out there, but I like how you go to game time. The kickoff time is being a variable in this. And look, we talk about that with Week 17 in terms of influencing some teams' sort of incentive, but that's a good point here. And look, App State's been solid. Obviously, Satterfield has moved on to Louisville, but the train has continued there for App State, so I got no problems with that play. Anything else jumping out to you?
Well, you look at another game that's maybe not going to be on the the top of the list for college football fanatics on Saturday. I'm going to look at the championship game in Detroit in the Mid-American Conference featuring Central Michigan and Miami of Ohio. First of all, what a turnaround at Central Michigan in the first year for new head coach Jim McElwain there. You look at their performance last year, the Chippewas went 1-11 in 2018. Their lone win, they didn't even beat an FBS school. Their lone win last year against FCS entry Maine. This year they improved by 7 wins, finished the regular season at 8-4, surprisingly won the MAC West Division. And they were picked by virtually everyone, including myself, to finish last in that division, yet they win the West. They've won 6 of their last 7 games entering this game. Their only loss during that span to Buffalo. Outside of that defeat to Buffalo, Central won the other 6 games during that stretch by an average of just over 23 points a game. Their offense has definitely been rolling, definitely their calling card. They averaged 32.4 points per game. Without a doubt, Central Michigan, the more talented, again, offensive team between these two MAC entries. Miami, Ohio certainly has the better defense. But going back to offense, this game's going to be played indoors at Ford Field. I think offense will be at a premium. The conditions will be a perfect 72 degrees with no wind. Central Michigan averages a full 10 points better offensively in points per game than Miami of Ohio. You look at the Red Hawks, only 100th in scoring offense among the 130 FBS schools at just 22.5 points per game. And that comes against a schedule ranked 91st in the country by Jeff Sagarin. So that's not against top-flight competition, only averaging 22.5 a game. I know it can be dangerous to single out one performance in a 12-game sample size, but I'm still kind of – I can't get past the Miami-Ohio victory over hapless Akron. They only beat the Zips 20-17 at home just a couple of weeks ago. That gives me reason for alarm. You look at an Akron team, finished the year 0-12 straight up. I think they were 1-11 against the spread. They lost their other 7 conference games besides the close call against Miami, Ohio, lost those other 7 by an average of 31.4 points per game. Miami, Ohio only beat them by a field goal. You're seeing a line of 6.5 or 7 out here, Central Michigan laying that amount. I say take the Chippewas, lay the touchdown. They win this one by double digits.
Yeah, I think we're well aware of Akron's ineptitude. I think we're all familiar with that on the program. What else you got that stands out to you?
Yeah, I probably got one more play I'm looking at, and kind of like you, it's tough this championship week. It's a tough handicap. You've only got 10 games, so you've primarily got 10 sides to look at and 10 totals, and you've often got rematches, so it's a pretty convoluted, difficult card to unravel. But I do have one more game that I like, and it's actually going to be a total in the SEC championship game in Atlanta between Georgia and LSU. You look at this LSU team, first of all, and we've been hearing it for years about how the Bayou Bengals were going to ditch their run-first, run-second offense and start incorporating a little bit more of the forward pass. And year after year, we've been fooled, and it hadn't happened. But this year, with their new pass game coordinator Joe Brady and then the main Joe, Heisman Trophy front-runner and likely winner, quarterback Joe Burrow, carrying the banner for change, LSU has really taken off, obviously, offensively. Arguably the most explosive offense in all of college football. They average more than 47 points a game, more than 550 yards per game. This has been a machine to date. 12 opponents have tried to slow down the LSU Express. Only one, that being Auburn, has held the Tigers to fewer than 36 points this season. And only one other, Mississippi State, has limited them to under 42 points this season. Looking at that Auburn game where LSU only scored 23 points, I think it was a 23-20 victory by LSU, that's still a little misleading. Even though LSU only scores 23 points, they gained 500 yards total offense, had 30 first downs, and the scoreboard really was not upticking a little bit more based on two turnovers by LSU and 12 penalties by LSU for more than 100 yards. So they really could have scored more than they did against Auburn. So now it's Georgia's turn to try to slow down the LSU offense. The Dogs definitely have one of the top defenses in all of college football. One key here, I think, is the fact that LSU likes to employ four wide receivers. Most teams don't have four guys who can man up on four wide receivers of the talent level that LSU possesses. There's probably no team in college football more equipped to do that than Georgia. You look at Georgia offensively, they're going to be without their top wide receiver, Lawrence Cager. He's out for the remainder of the season with injury. Their number two receiver, as we know, true freshman, George Pickens, got in an ill-advised fight with a Georgia Tech player in the second half of that game last week. He's out for the first half. And then you look at their all-league tailback, DeAndre Swift. He's dealing with a bum left shoulder. I think without question he's going to play, but he's probably going to be limited. So the Dogs' offense, which is already somewhat pedestrian, is going to be hampered by some personnel issues. Georgia likes to play slow. They only average 131.4 total plays a game. I think Georgia's going to try to shorten this game. They're going to try to win with defense and ball control running a game. I like this game to go under the total of 55.
Aggressive mood. A move because, as I did in the last week's Iron Bowl, I tried to take the under, and it just exploded on me. It just got away. Now, it was 10-10 about 7 minutes ago in the second quarter, so I was thinking I was okay. And I had the first half under as my favorite part of the play, but no dice.
Yeah, that was, I tell you, that was an explosive outbreak by both teams. And anytime you're betting an under in a college football game and you've got two pick sixes by one team, you're probably in a little bit of trouble. So I can feel for you. I play a lot of totals, and I'm primarily, although not certainly solely, an under player. I can feel your pain when a game like that starts getting out of hand and they start scoring in bunches.
Yeah, no, it was not fun. Okay, so those are your only official plays, right? Like, those are the three plays you like?
Correct, absolutely.
Okay. So outside of that, what do you make of this line being over a touchdown with LSU laying?
You know, I'll lean towards Georgia. I'm not going to commit to it yet because I'm concerned about Swift's availability.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Kirby Smart predictably has been pretty elusive as to his health, Swift's health. He said, you know, he's going to – I think he'll be ready to go and those types of just general things. So I want to be as certain as I can be that he's going to be at least somewhere close to 100% because they don't have too many offensive weapons. They're not going to beat LSU through the air. But if Swift looks like he's at least – you know, close to 100% again. I think Georgia getting the points, getting the seven, I think that's going to be the side here. But it's certainly contingent on Swift's availability and hopefully his, you know, being close to full health.
LSU's minus four in the first half. Something to consider there.
Yeah, you know, I don't play too many first halves.
You're not into that?
A lot of players, you kind of have to pick, I think, as a handicapper, what types of bets you're gonna look at and how you're going to approach it and so forth. And certainly I don't just take it off the board and not look at it at all. But, you know, again, you know, if you're going to take seven for the game, you know, you might take, you know, half of it at plus four for the first half and then take the seven for the full game. But, you know, I don't delve too much in first halves. I'm more of a second half guy.
Mm-hmm.
To try sometimes for a middle or sometimes to make a second half play based on what I've seen in the first half of a game, whether it be statistically or from an injury standpoint or the amount of the deficit at halftime, those types of things. So I'm more of a second half player than a first half player, but I certainly, again, if I was looking at one side or the other for the first half, it would be Georgia plus those points.
Yeah, first halves make sense when it's a blowout and you're trying to handicap and avoid the garbage time and the reserves of the fourth quarter, things like that, something we've talked about a lot on this podcast. What do you make of Utah being such a sizable favorite now when we were talking about a look-ahead line close to 3.5, 3-ish, and now it's 6.5?
I mean, you hit it on the nose, Doug, and I'll give my take on it. You know, you just purely examine the Utah-Oregon game by power ratings and what the line would be. And it looks like, you know, you look at it, and I use it my own. I use a couple of other sources. It's in the neighborhood of Utah minus three. But what we've got here, I think, in my opinion, is a classic case of having to pay a premium to bet the favorite when there's an abbreviated schedule and only a relatively small number of games to bet on. We talked about there's 10 games this weekend on the college card. The public's going to be involved in those games. They're going to typically bet the favorite. And the book, in response, is going to place an even higher tariff than normal on the favorite. And then an added dimension to this game, this is a standalone Friday game, as far as the college football card goes anyway. So this game's going to be even more heavily shaded towards Utah, so you're going to have to pay even a greater premium to bet on the favorite. So they just jacked this thing up. Utah, you know, obviously if they win, I say obviously, I think they've got a excellent chance to make the 14 college football playoff with a victory. So, you know, the line, I think you're paying a premium again to play the favorite here. If you're looking purely into numbers, you know, I think you have to look strong at Oregon. And if you're a patient type, you know, you might even see a seven. I think right now the consensus is pretty much 6.5. If you see a seven and you're a numbers guy, I think you got to take the Ducks.
For the sake of the picks column I have to do for that gets posted every Thursday in ESPN.com's chalk section, I might just do one play, a money line parlay with Utah and Oklahoma. I don't think I'm going to bet it, though, and I'll even say that in my write-up, just full disclosure. I just think I want to get it to a pick where it's a minus, I think it's like 117, the money line parlay. I just don't think there's like value per se. I do think there's going to be value on the Utes in game. Utah is a very slow starting team. They were trailing 7-0 last week. They just have a kind of a knack because they are a grind you down, wear you out, and then just, you know, beat you down. So you're very just soft in the second half, and that's where they pull away and cover. It's never like a easy cover. It's always like a narrow cover at the end. But they cover, and they've covered, I want to say, 8 straight games, including 3 spreads of at least 20. So I think they're going to cover, but I'm not going to grab this number because I don't think it's going to be the best number out there. So I like the Utes to win the game. I just think they're that much better. I've never been a huge Herbert guy. He has all the measurables. He obviously has the size. He has the arm strength and has obviously a great sort of sizzle reel, a term we use here in the business. It's just his highlight reel is going to be great. But I don't think his decision-making is that ideal, and we saw that against the Arizona State game when they lost. I was really annoyed because I was hoping this line would be close to pick looking ahead, but obviously the loss to ASU sort of gave us a little reality check on the Ducks. So I like them, and then I also like Oklahoma to get the win as well. I think they're going to cover, but I don't want to lay the 8.5. What do you make of that game, given that you are kind of in your backyard out there?
Yeah, I mean, this is a tough game to, you know, again, you've got the rematch. They played 3 weeks ago in Waco with game day on hand, and, you know, we don't have to rehash all that, but Baylor led by 25 points early in the second quarter, led by 21 at the half. The Sooners shut out the Bears in the second half and win that game 34-31, and now the schools shift their traveling act 100 miles to the north to so-called Jerry's World, and they're meeting again 3 weeks later in the Big 12 championship game. You know, both teams, again, have at least some semblance of hope to make the four-team college football playoff with a victory over the other on Saturday. I think it's undebatable that Oklahoma has a better shot than Baylor based on, you know, whether they win compared to Baylor winning. You know, Oklahoma would have a better shot. But this is really a tough handicap. It's tough to assess how these schools are going to respond just 20 days after Oklahoma's stunning comeback win. But I tend to lean towards believing Baylor is still at least somewhat shell-shocked by the dramatic turn of events of just 21 days ago. And you look at that game statistically, and Baylor was really shut down in the second half. But they only had 307 total yards in the game. They were outgained by more than 200 yards by Oklahoma. Oklahoma had a 34-18 advantage in first downs. Jalen Hurts had a big game, had 297 yards passing, 114 yards rushing. And something to note, All-America wide receiver CeeDee Lamb, he didn't even play against Baylor.
Yeah.
He was out that game. He's going to be available, I believe, for this game on Saturday. I don't have a real opinion, but I certainly feel like Oklahoma's going to win the game. So I cannot fault your approach pairing Oklahoma with Utah in a two-team parlay there.
I also want to remind everyone, what is this, year five of the playoff? We have yet to see an upset in conference championship weekend, these Power Five conference games. Now, I think the first year where Cardale Jones was the starting quarterback, I think the line was like two. I'm talking about like real upsets, like six, seven. So we don't see these teams lose. Just, you know, throughout the course of the regular season, there's flat spots, there's look-ahead spots, there's just home and road situations. We've seen these losses occur. Nobody runs the table. I'm just frankly, I'm surprised we have three undefeateds right now at the top of the playoff rankings. But in general, we see the ebb and the flow of the season. But once you sort of get through that lull and you have the end of the season with the dangled carrot of a playoff berth on the line, we haven't seen the upsets yet in these neutral sites. So that's why I'm inclined to kind of ride that wave of chalk holding serve.
You know, absolutely. Not to agree for just the sake of agreement, but during a college football season, not only the season, but you have to remember these teams started practicing back in early August. They've had very, they've had two open dates probably during the year, but somewhere they kind of slip up, and usually it'll happen sometime in November. They might lay an egg, and they don't have what I call their full measure of collective team psyche. So they have a letdown spot, but when they get to this game, everybody's going to be all in. Everybody's going to have that full measure of collective team psyche. So the better team, the favored team, the cream, is usually going to rise to the top. So I think you've got a real good point there. These teams are going to be fully invested. Nobody's going to be, you know, sleeping during film study, hopefully. Nobody's going to be, doing some of the things they might do in terms of lack of preparation or lack of focus that might hit them during the dog days of November. These conference championship games are going to be fully focused. The best man is usually going to win.
Now, that's not to say that teams don't lay an egg. We've seen it over the years, right? Wasn't West Virginia with Rich Rod and Pitt, and what was that? Was it the Backyard Brawl? It was like a 17-point spread, and they lost outright, and
right.
They were going to go to the BCS title game. That was in the mid-2000s, I want to say.
Right, yep.
Okay, so that happens. When the chips are on the table, there's still upsets. I believe UCLA and Miami in 98-ish, they had a game that was relocated or rescheduled to December because of a hurricane during the season. It was an island game, if you will. It was kind of like Army-Navy was the only game that day. And UCLA blew it. Or was it Miami that blew it? I forget. One of those teams blew it. So it happens even when the chips are on the table. But I would say that I'm confident in Utah's ability to win the game, and I'm confident in Oklahoma's ability to win the game as well. I think LSU wins, but I wouldn't want to put them in a parlay. As much as I don't think Georgia's that great this year, and I've tried to fade them, I wouldn't put them in, and then, of course, Clemson's laying 29. That's a moot point. The number does feel high. What do you think about that one, Paul?
You know, I think the number, you know, I definitely couldn't lay 28.5 points, 29 points. You know, you look at it, and it's a Power 5 championship, you know, conference championship game. It almost seems like a misprint. You know, I wouldn't probably look at the side as much as I would look at the total, which I think there's still some 55.5 out there.
Mm-hmm.
You look at Virginia, they rely heavily on their quarterback, Bryce Perkins, for most of their offensive production. He's thrown for over 2,900 yards. He's got a modest 16-9 touchdown to interception ratio. Also leads the Cavaliers in rushing with just under 700 yards rushing. He's kind of a one-man band, and you're not going to beat Clemson with a one-man band. So if you look at this total of 55.5, and you correlate it to the spread in the game, it comes down to whether you think Virginia will score 13 points against Clemson. I don't think they will. You look at this Virginia offense against Louisville, they scored just 21 points, averaged just 4.6 yards per play against a Louisville defense that was not very good. And to illustrate how good that Louisville defense was or not, they gave up an average of 41 points a game in their other 7 ACC games and gave up just 21 points, 4.6 yards per play against Virginia. I think Clemson's going to shut them down. This is a Clemson defense only giving up 9.7 yards per game. That after losing 4 members of the defensive line, 3 were first-round picks last spring, the other a fourth-round pick, and they're just reloading. Obviously, the schedule hadn't been that great. You know, they have a schedule that I think ranks about 66 by Jeff Sagrin, but still, this is a great Clemson defense. If I'm going to be involved in that game at all, which right now I'm not, I'd be looking more at the under 55.5 than the side.
And for those wondering if they should take the points, be careful, because I know it's 20 over 4 touchdowns in a Power 5 title game, but this is a Clemson team that since near having that scare with North Carolina, they have played 6 FBS opponents, have covered in all 6 of them, and even with the Wofford game, they have scored in every single quarter since that North Carolina near upset. Now, a lot of that's garbage time, third string quarterbacks in the fourth quarter, but they've been just beating down opponents, and they haven't had sort of like that flat quarter even, let alone game. I think they're going to win it all. I still maintain they're the best team. Now, obviously, I wouldn't be shocked because I think they're going to have some narrow spreads come playoff time, but I'm not exactly running to bet the Cavaliers that plus the points. I just think there's better bets out there.
Yeah, I mean, that North Carolina loss, if you include the Wofford game, they played 7 games. I said North Carolina loss, the one-point
right,
win,
right.
The narrow escape. They played 7 games since then. They've won all 7 of those by 31 points or more, by an average of 41.7 points per game. And another thing to be a little bit leery of about this game and being enticed perhaps to take Virginia, I think it's Dabo's, you know, speech that his team's not getting any respect. They don't want us in the playoff. You know, clearly he's trying to light a fire under his troops, and they might respond in a big way Saturday in that ACC title game. So I don't know if I'd want to take a team on the heels of this emotional tirade by Dabo Swinney that his team doesn't get any respect. And a lot of people have asked, and I have no doubt it's not going to be a big number, but if Clemson were to play was to play LSU in the playoff, Clemson's going to be favored. They're going to be a small favorite over LSU, as would Ohio State. So those are things to kind of keep in your back pocket. But I would be a little bit scared to take Virginia because, like you pointed out, as well as myself, Clemson has been absolutely rolling.
I'm kind of inclined to lay the lumber now that I think about it and talk it out. We'll see. I'm tempted here. All right, my man. Well, good stuff as always. Really appreciate your perspective, Paul, and good luck this weekend.
Good luck to you guys. Appreciate you having me on, and hope everybody cashes all their tickets this weekend.
Kicking is for losers.
It certainly is, and I'm kind of surprised, Mr. Executive Director, that given how much you are on the Jim Harbaugh bandwagon and on Jim Harbaugh Island, that the man that you have such faith in would let you down.
Yeah, it's an island, all right. I don't think – does anybody still support Coach Harbaugh, except for me, of course?
I think you do. So what was it, 42 to what when he kicked the field
42
goal?
42 to 16. He kicked the field goal. He made it 42 to 19. You know, he actually – they actually got it to 42 to 27, and they had the ball back down 2 possessions. But I still thought that kicking a field goal there was pretty silly.
Yeah, and it was like 4th and 10, wasn't it? It wasn't exactly 4th and 4. So.
Right, right. Well, I don't think he should have kicked the field goal there. But look, they were going to lose that game either way. And Ohio State's just too much better than Michigan is.
Yeah, there is a gap, despite Harbaugh refusing to answer insults at the podium after the game, yeah, as opposed to questions. So here we are, light card, and not a ton of upsets the last since in the era of the college football playoff. This is sort of when the best teams just kind of hold serve. Now, obviously, sometimes they cover the underdogs, but we have some interesting lines here. This Oregon-Utah line, you guys were talking like it'd be 3, and we're looking, yeah, at 6.5 here Friday night.
Yeah, Utah minus 6.5 here. I don't think we've moved that number once all week. The action very split. We were at 6. We went to 6.5, but basically the same number, right? So that number's really stayed here in the same spot the whole week. We did think it was going to be a little lower. I thought Utah would be a little bit over 3 here. But Oregon losing to Arizona State 2 weeks ago means they're out of any college football playoff consideration. There's some angle of Utah needs to blow these guys out to overtake Oklahoma if we assume Georgia loses to LSU on Saturday. I guess that's a factor. But here at the book, at the Westgate, it's very split action on the Pac-12 game.
The total has come down, and I agree with the line move, coming down from 51 to 46. I thought I saw 50.5 the other day, and I was like, that feels high for a Utah team that just clamps down. But the Ducks can surprise you, and after I thought the total in the Iron Bowl was way off at 50, and I had the under. I learned the hard way, so maybe it's not too high.
Well, Utah is so good defensively. I actually think Oregon is a more talented team than Utah is, but Utah much more well-coached. I'd give a huge coaching edge to Kyle Whittingham here over Mario Cristobal. And Utah's a team, they've just been crushing everybody they've been playing the last like month or so.
Do you watch the series on HBO, Barry?
No, actually I don't. And it's one of my great shames because I watch like every show on HBO, and I don't really have any reason why I don't watch Barry because I've heard good things about it.
No, I feel like there's a character. It's Cristobal or something like that. So anytime I hear Mario Cristobal's name, Hank is the name of the guy who says the term Cristobal. I don't know. A little sidetrack there.
Did you watch The Righteous Gemstones?
I did not.
I'll watch Barry and you watch The Righteous Gemstones. We'll report back to each other.
I don't watch Game of Thrones, so I'm the one guy in America still. So
I never said anything about that. But The Righteous Gemstones, Walton Goggins plays a character named Baby Billy Freeman who is incredible. It's so good. It's so funny, man.
All right, I'll check it out. I need to add to my...
I know you don't have a lot on your plate, Doug. You're pretty. You don't have a lot going on. So why don't you go and watch an entire HBO show and report back to me?
Well, maybe I'll do it with all the extra time with such few games this weekend.
Yeah.
Now, I know you guys are big on Georgia getting the points. It touched 7.5. It's come back down to 7 here. I'm surprised by the number, but I literally want no part of any underdogs this weekend.
Well, LSU beating Texas A&M 51-7 obviously is going to have something to do with that number being so high, and I understand that. You know, everybody's a prisoner of the moment. LSU just destroyed the Aggies on Saturday night. Pickens, the receiver for Georgia, suspended for the first half. I saw DeAndre Swift get a little banged up on the game Saturday against Georgia Tech. So there's a lot of reasons why this line is so high. But I just think Georgia is really maybe a little underrated defensively. I mean, look what Georgia did defensively to Auburn when they played them a few weeks ago. And then look what Auburn did on Saturday to Alabama.
Yeah.
So I like Georgia here. You know, I know that, look, LSU's not going to lay down. I get that. But the SEC would certainly like to see Georgia win this game. Georgia wins this game, the SEC is going to get two teams into the college football playoff, and Twitter can lose its collective mind again.
Are you suggesting some conspiracy theorists with the officiating?
I'm not saying that. All I'm saying is it's the SEC championship game, and I'm sure the SEC would like to see Georgia win the game. That's all I'm saying.
It is an interesting line. So what would you rather lay, 7 against Georgia in a neutral or 6 at Texas?
I think I'd have to go with 6 at Texas for sure.
Right. Like, it is kind of funny when you put it in that perspective. Now, granted, that was in early September when the Tigers went into Austin and took care of business, and it was a miracle cover in a lot of ways. But it is kind of funny when you look at some of the season that's played out with where the market was, and here we are seemingly an astronomically high number because you guys were looking at, what, 3 earlier?
We thought it was going to be less than 3.
Wow.
And then obviously a lot happened on Saturday. you know, that speaking of that Texas A&M LSU game again, Texas A&M really threw everything they had into that Georgia game the week before. They came up short in that game, and Texas A&M maybe played the hardest schedule in all of college football, definitely all of college football, one of the hardest in the history of college football, in my opinion. They really ran out of gas in that game, and I know LSU was out for blood after the game between those two teams last season, so that it was a very impressive win by LSU, but I think it's having a little bit too much influence on this SEC championship game number. I really think this line's way too high.
You ready to jump on the Badgers?
No, I'm not. I mean, do you want to?
No,
I can't get in front of Ohio State, man. I said last week I thought the Ohio State-Michigan game, Michigan line, excuse me, was way too low because people overreacted to that Ohio State-Penn State game. But I saw a lot of sharp guys betting Michigan. I wanted no part of that one. Getting in front of Ohio State is just dangerous.
Yeah, it is. I did lean Michigan last week just because I thought they were playing their best ball, and it was a big line. But
they were playing their best ball. Michigan was on a roll coming into that game. I don't think you were incorrect about that whatsoever. They just ran into a far superior team. That's all that was. Michigan have been playing very well the last month of the year.
I also think this Buckeyes team is weird in that they have, like, so many third and longs for being such a dominant team. Now they convert them all and Fields makes all the plays, but I just – look, they'll grind you in four quarters, but there's just times where you wonder – some. I mean, even like early on against Michigan State, even Northwestern first quarter was like somewhat close. I just feel like you don't get that sense of – you get the sense of the box score and the four-quarter dominance, but they don't just dominate every play, I guess. I don't know. Maybe I'm just splitting hairs.
Think about what you're saying. I mean, I know what you're saying, but think about it. You're basically saying the only knock on this team is they sometimes don't dominate their opponent in the first quarter.
Yeah, like every single – and they're like the best second quarter team in the country.
Yeah.
No, like they're awesome. They're awesome. We're trying to split hairs here, whether, A, they can cover three scores with Wisconsin, but also are they the best team in the country? I probably am on Clemson for that discussion.
I've been saying for a while now, I do think Clemson is better than Ohio State. And we'll probably find out in December or January. I get that. But I've been saying for a while now, I lean Clemson a little bit over Ohio State. If you're looking for an angle in this game on Saturday, the Big Ten championship game, Ohio State's going to make it to the college football playoff even if they lose this game. So if in some way that can talk you into betting on Wisconsin, there's something. But
yeah, but I worry. Like, I think we get caught up in some of that. I think the guys want to win. Like, I remember trying to handicap conference title games in basketball and saying, well, the other team needs it. It's like, yeah, but these guys have like want to beat their rival in the championship game and win a conference championship. Like, I remember having this discussion with like humans about those Rebels teams that were already kind of clinching at large bid and were facing BYU or whatever in the Mountain West title game, and you know, you're just trying to handicap it and looking for angles. I don't think Ohio State's going to like lay down because they don't need the game. You're suggesting that, of course not.
I don't think that at all. I'm just saying if you're looking for an angle there, LSU and Ohio State are both into their conference championship, into their college football playoff positions, whether they lose.
Right, but the counter to that narrative, seeding matters so much because you really want to be the one seed. So maybe style points even matter more this week than they have all year.
Well, if you look at, there's a top three teams of LSU, Ohio State, and Clemson, in whatever order you want to seed them, you got to think that whoever is the one seed will probably play Oklahoma or Utah if we assume LSU wins on Saturday. And that would mean the other two teams have to play each other. So that could be like Clemson versus Ohio State in the semifinal if LSU blows out Georgia. Or if Ohio State is the one seed, Clemson would have to play LSU in the first game. So certainly there's a lot at stake there. I mean, I'd much rather play Oklahoma than play Clemson, for instance.
One thing we've seen the committee demonstrate since its inception, and I applaud it, is the fluidity. Moving teams and don't holding them there just because they won. I think that's silly. I think fluidity is really important. And we actually just saw it in college basketball. Michigan go from unranked to number four. I love that early on in the season. I'm okay with preseason rankings as long as you maintain fluidity, especially early on. And in this case, I don't see how LSU, if they beat Georgia, is not the number one team in the country based on their schedule and going undefeated.
Yeah, I think if LSU has an impressive win on Saturday against Georgia, I totally agree with you. I think they could jump up to number one, and that would set up an unbelievable semifinal between Clemson and Ohio State. Imagine that game in the college football semifinal. That'd be amazing.
Yeah, and it speaks to, you know, what we've talked about in terms of, you know, everyone who's going to get in this, like you mentioned, Oklahoma or Utah, everything is case by case, right? every year is so different. We saw Florida State was undefeated. I think they were the only undefeated team in the country, and they were the three seed that year. They lost to Oregon in the Rose Bowl
because they played Oregon in the Rose Bowl.
They were trailing Louisville and every other team at halftime down the stretch. They were limping to the finish line. They didn't look that great, so to speak. So the eye test matters. Everything matters, but I do think LSU gets in. The question is, are they going to be, if they're the one seed and beat Georgia, are they going to be facing Oklahoma and Utah? Because I realize that Utah has been ahead of Oklahoma for, I don't know, whatever it is, four straight weeks, because Oklahoma has shown some vulnerability when they had that stretch of three straight wins by a combined 8 points, and then obviously covered against Okie State in Bedlam, but they were facing a backup quarterback with Sanders out. So, but you have to think a win over Baylor might give OU the nudge.
I think it's very possible. I think it's good for OU that Baylor won. So, I mean, I know they just played Kansas, but they beat them 61-6. It definitely helps Oklahoma that Baylor's coming into this game 11-1. There's no question about that.
And there's some conspiracy theorists out there. Joe Castiglione, who's the AD of Oklahoma, is on the committee, and he may have influenced, and I'm looking it up just so I get my ducks in a row here, because so much is how your schedule strength, all that. He made sure Okie State was ranked 25th, though they snuck into the ranking, so that helps OU's schedule that they beat an Okie State team that is ranked. It's ranked. How many ranked teams did you beat? So obviously it's very important that Okie State is 25th and not 26th.
Well, you know this from just talking to me on the side. I always think that Oklahoma is the team that gets the benefit of the doubt more than anybody from the committee. They got in kind of off the bubble the last 2 years. They lost in the semifinal both times. I know everybody always complains about the SEC getting all these teams into the playoff, but a lot of times these SEC teams get into the playoff and then they win. I mean, a couple years ago, we saw two SEC teams win in the semifinals, and we had an all-SEC championship game.
Yeah, I mean, that was a coin flip win in the Rose Bowl over the Sooners, but you know what? They win. And
they won, though.
It's, you know, I agree with you. I just think we need to be careful making blanket statements year by year, and this is why I was kind of very anti-Alabama getting in this year, just because they got in 2 years ago after having a one loss and not making the SEC title game, not even win their division. Every year is so different. Like, 1 year, Oklahoma benefited from playing Ohio State in non-conference. That helped that feather in their cap, so to speak, on the resume. Another year, it hurt them. And this year, I didn't see a path for Alabama. I didn't. They got in because they got help that there were conference champions elsewhere that either had two losses or bad, you know. It just played out better for them. And so to make a blanket statement that Alabama was going to get in this year because they got in 2 years ago, that's just, you can't operate in a vacuum like that. So just to come full circle, Oklahoma, I need to be reminded year by year if they should have gotten in or not. I don't remember too much dissension. I, for one, thought Stanford the year with McCaffrey should have got in with two losses. The year they played Northwestern, the opener, lost, and then lost another game later in the season. I think it was Notre Dame. I'm not sure. But either way, neither here nor there. I'm curious to see. You can't have an issue with OU or Utah getting in, assuming all chalk wins this weekend. It's just too bad for the fifth team.
If Georgia wins against LSU, Georgia would be 12-1. They'd be SEC champions. Right. I think we all agree the SEC is the best conference. They would have wins over Notre Dame, Florida, at Auburn, and of course LSU on a neutral field. So to me, Georgia would be a no-brainer to get in. Now,
agreed.
If Georgia loses and they're favored to lose, right? I would lean to Utah if they take care of business on Friday, but I would expect the committee to jump Oklahoma over Utah if they have a very impressive performance in the Big 12 championship game.
If those two schools played on a neutral, what's your line?
You're talking about Utah and Oklahoma.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I think what would happen is Oklahoma would be a small favorite in that game, maybe like a 3-point favorite, but I would actually expect Utah to win the game.
I would, too. And maybe I'm a little Pac-12 West Coast bias, and that's fine. I'm willing to admit that. But I really like this Utah team. I've been very impressed. I think they're extremely well coached. I think the defense has a lot of future NFLers on there.
Yep.
And I think the offense is better than people give it credit for. Is it explosive? Is it as good as Oklahoma's? Of course not. But we'll see what plays out. But you know what? Each team can only look themselves in the mirror, because one lost to USC and one lost to K-State. And the chips didn't fall their way because they have three undefeateds to win power conferences. So it is what it is. Every year is different. But you know what? As Brad Edwards says, you may have had a case for the top four, but you never would have had a case for top two. And that was the old format. So,
What if we had? What if there was a top two format right now? Let's say all three of the undefeated teams win. Who do you leave out of that group? I guess they'd probably leave Clemson out, but Clemson would be on a 28-game winning streak and be the defending national champions. Obviously, they'd be undefeated. What exactly are they supposed to do?
It's kind of like the survivor pools that all make a side bet and decide to chop ahead of time. I think all three would need to say that, hey, we'll play a semifinal on our own in like Christmas Day or something. And just all kind of make a pact ahead of time.
This would be as hard of a year as we've ever seen to pick two if that were to happen. And I do think if Clemson somehow loses to Virginia on Saturday, I do think they would fall out of the college football playoff, unlike Ohio State and LSU. I think they can both lose just because the ACC has been so bad this year. But that's not Clemson's fault.
No.
It's not Clemson's fault that Florida State, Miami are both way down right now.
And they're crushing teams.
Yeah.
Question for you.
They absolutely destroy everybody they play.
Except for Carolina. Didn't we have a similar situation the year USC won and then Auburn won in the Sugar Bowl with Jason Campbell as the quarterback? Didn't we have a split national championship?
Yeah, well, what happened that year was Oklahoma got in over Auburn.
Right. There were three undefeateds, or were they 3-1 loss?
I think they were 3-1 loss, but I'd have to look that up. Okay. But I remember it was between Oklahoma and Auburn. If I remember correctly, Oklahoma got the nod, and then they just got trashed by USC in the Orange Bowl.
Correct. 57.
So I'm saying Oklahoma they tend to get the benefit of the doubt. There was an Oklahoma team in 2003, lost the Big 12 championship game by 4 touchdowns to Kansas State, and then got into the national championship game where they lost to LSU. So this is a program that I don't want people to think I hate Oklahoma football or anything. I have no problem with them at all. I'm just saying that they seem to always get the benefit of the doubt in these situations.
No argument. No argument there. It's going to be fun how it all plays out. I believe 2004 was the year we're talking about.
Yeah.
And, yeah.
That sounds right. I know I was a college man at the time. I remember that game.
I was in Iowa. Okay, my friend. Great stuff. Is any huge liability? Do you guys still have the Heisman Trophy odds up?
No, we had to close it per gaming. Certainly, we expect, obviously, for Joe Burrow to win, and we're gonna lose a pretty good number on that. But we had to close it 2 weeks before the end of the regular season. That was per Nevada gaming regulations. So there's no longer betting on the Heisman Trophy in the state of Nevada. The only other thing I wanted to comment on, the Big 12 title game, that number's come down. Everybody's actually on Baylor, the dog. Mm-hmm. That number's come down from 10 to 8.5 here. So that, you know, I know you liked it. Those to be noted when the
but it's usually the reverse line movement. That's when we get the bat signal, right?
Yeah. Have you considered this? Has any quarterback ever had a more interesting college career than Jalen Hurts? I mean, this guy has started in SEC championship games, national championship games. Now he's going to start in the Big 12 championship game. He started in the Iron Bowl. He started in the Red River Shootout. I mean, this guy's been all over the place.
It's a great point. We'll see if he has it in him to play for another team in the playoff, right? If Oklahoma gets in,
yeah,
that would be fascinating.
That's true. He could get into another college football playoff with Oklahoma. I think it's very possible. I mean, if Oregon can somehow win on Friday, all Oklahoma would really need to do is win and then have Georgia lose, and it wouldn't even be a question they'd get into the playoff.
All right, Mr. Director, it was fun. Good college season. We'll get you back for the bowl game. Obviously, we're your staple with the NFL podcast.
Yeah, I'll talk to you tomorrow for the NFL.
Stop. Have a time.
Unfortunately, not a lot of hammers for your fearless leader here, your host, but that's okay. You got to pick your spots. Don't love this card. I said I'm waiting to get Utah at a lower number live wagering, and I still may come around on Clemson and Ohio State laying the lumber there. We'll see what transpires. Travis, you got anything jumping out to you?
Nothing crazy. I'm just this time around with Ohio State's indoors, so it'll be interesting to see that kind of how that impacts things. Because last time they played, it was kind of the rainy, yucky weather, and it kind of a slow game early on.
Yeah, I'm not a big believer in the Badgers' offense, but you know what? We'll see. It's not just that game. Even the Northwestern game was weird, although that was the letdown after beating Michigan.
You also have Justin Fields playing with the big brace, how that will impact him running.
So I didn't take your advice. I did limp to the finish line. I only gave 3 plays last week, the chalk. The other 2 would have hit, but that's okay. I went 1-2, and looks like I'm going to close the year around 57%, which we'll take, obviously.
It's a profit.
Yeah, very, very. I just I chickened out a little bit. There are a few plays I left on the table, but that's okay. Live and learn. I'm a little nervous about the bowl season. a much better regular season handicapper than the Bulls. So we'll get to all that.
We don't know who's going to – who cares?
That's right. It's tough. No, I'm a big live better.
All
live
of a sudden, I think you need to also because a player might – right before the games, I'm not playing.
Right, but there's so much line movement too, so you want to get early if you want to beat the market on some of that stuff. So it's tricky. So, Travis, no podcast next week for college, right? Fair?
Correct.
We'll do one before college and the Bulls, and we'll probably break it up into like the first chunk and then the next chunk. So thanks to everyone for their loyal listenership throughout the season. Obviously, we have a great time here. Thanks to Paul Stone. Thanks to Matt Eumanns. Thanks to Aaron Renning. Thanks to Preston Johnson. And, of course, John Murray, Mr. Executive Director. Fun college season. Hope you all enjoyed it. And we'll be back for the bowl season.